You are driving down the road, and that light comes on. What light? The engine light. And you ask yourself two questions. What now, and how much is it going to cost? But when that engine light comes on, you can either take it to the shop and find out what's wrong with it and get it fixed, or you can put a piece of black tape over it so you won't be constantly reminded of it each and every time you start your car. And the engine light has been likened to guilt. When we are guilty, we can address it, or we can try to ignore it. Find ways to try and numb and dull the guilt. And in so doing, our hearts can become callous. But how does one go from a callous heart to a culpable heart? To a heart that takes responsibility. We continue our series on Joseph from the book of Genesis. We've made it to chapter 42. Joseph, who was betrayed by his own brothers and sold into slavery, was taken down to Egypt. He's been promoted number two over all the land. Number one over Egypt is Pharaoh, of course. But God had given Pharaoh some bizarre dreams that only Joseph could interpret. The dream showed that 7 years of plenty were coming to the land, followed by seven really bad years of famine. But because of Joseph's leadership, grain was saved during the seven good years to be used to get them through the seven really bad years. This famine was not limited to just Egypt. It was spread out over the whole known world, including the land of Canaan, where Joseph's brothers were. And it has been 20 or more years since they did that evil to Joseph. Did they ever think of him? Did they ever carry guilt for what they did? At any rate, the brothers are now desperate. Times are tough. There's not enough food. The grain has run out. And so their father, Jacob, tells them to get to Egypt, since Egypt had grain thanks to Joseph's leadership. Only that, youngest brother Benjamin was not to go with the other brothers. Father Jacob shows favoritism to Benjamin and protects him from any possible danger. The brothers get to Egypt and they come and bow before Joseph, though they don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And instead of Joseph disclosing his identity to them right there and then, Joseph will put them through some tests. And if you weren't here last time or you're not familiar with the story, you might think Joseph is being extremely cruel towards his brothers by these tests. But as I tried to show last time, Joseph's tests were designed to see if they have changed in the past 20-some years. My passage is Genesis 42:10 through 38. And I want to start actually back with verse 9. Again, Joseph's brothers, minus Benjamin, they come and they bow before Joseph. This bowing triggers a memory in Joseph. Verse 9, then he remembered his dreams about them. Remember, Joseph was given prophetic dreams that said his own family would bow before him. I argued that it was partially being fulfilled here. Let's keep reading. And said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. Of course, being spies would, I would guess, bring a death sentence there in Egypt. Again, Joseph is testing them, but how would the charge of being a spy be a test? Do you remember back in chapter 37 where Jacob sent Joseph to check on his brothers and it eventually led to him being betrayed? And though the word spying wasn't used there, it's possible that that's how the brothers interpreted Joseph coming to check on them. And so, in a reversal, now Joseph accuses them, his brothers, of spying. In other words, how does it feel to be falsely accused of spying? It's not fun, is it? Verse 10. No, my lord, they answered. Your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies. Now, you see how defensive they are. Now, I'm not faulting them. They are innocent of spying. Sure, some people are good liars, but I think it's also true that when we are falsely accused of something, we can be more apt to defend ourselves, and rightly so. And when these brothers get accused of lying, they defend themselves because they truly were not spies. They were in Egypt to get grain. But I do find their words at the end of verse 11 comical. Look at it again. They say, "Your servants are honest men, not spies." What's comical about that? You know, we may be kidnappers, slave traders, murderers, adulterers, and you get jealous, but hey, we're no spies. We're better than that. Now, sure, they are honest in regard to telling the truth as to why they are there in Egypt, But are they honest in other areas? How will Joseph know? He will test them. And I want you to think about what might be going through Joseph's mind here. You see, God has revealed some things to Joseph via special revelation, the ability to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And also, God given Joseph his own dreams back in 37. But God hasn't revealed everything to Joseph. Joseph doesn't know if these brothers have changed. But something else Joseph wouldn't know at this point, probably, and that is, where is Brother Benjamin? You see, we, the reader, we know where Benjamin is. The brothers know where he is. He's back home with Father. But Joseph doesn't know this. And thus, can you imagine what Joseph might be thinking at this point? Where is Benjamin? Did my brothers get rid of Benjamin like they did with me? Did they kill him? And of course, he would be wondering, what about Dad? Is he still alive? Verse 12. No, he said to them, you have come to see where our land is unprotected. The Hebrew actually says the nakedness of the land. In other words, if I may be graphic, you have come to violate / rape the land. And you say, well, why would you make that connotation? Well, it's not as far-fetched as you might think. It's because it's similar to what Joseph went through. Hear me. I don't think Joseph is accusing them of having committed some sexual sin, but you remember, because of what the brothers did to him, he too ended up in a place where he was accused of rape or attempted rape. I'm talking about with Potiphar's wife. In other words, how does it feel to be falsely accused of taking advantage of another's vulnerability? It's not fun, is it? Verse 13. But they replied, your servants were 12 brothers, the son of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more. Does your translation say your servants were or are 12 brothers? I mean, are they admitting Joseph is still alive or assuming he's dead? Well, unfortunately, the Hebrew doesn't have a verb here, so it reads something like, your servants, 12 brothers. But at least they are acknowledging Joseph, though they don't give his name. And here Joseph would learn that his father is still alive. Verse 14, Joseph said to them, it is just as I told you, you are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison, so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. And he put them all in custody for 3 days. Now again, Joseph is not being vindictive, but is testing them. Are they the same scoundrels they were over 2 decades ago? How will they hold up under similar circumstances like what Joseph went through? Joseph was innocent and got thrown into prison. The brothers here are innocent, at least to the charge of spying. But what will it be like for them when they are thrown into prison? I mean, how do you like being in prison? It's not fun, is it? So, Joseph, who again, they don't realize is their brother, right before them, he puts them into prison. Now, we know that it's for 3 days, but it doesn't say that they knew how long it would be. It would take for however long it would be for one of them to go back to Canaan, convince Father to send Benjamin, and return back. From what I read, a round trip would have taken at least close to 3 weeks. Of course, that depends on stops, the mode of travel, and even if Jacob is willing to send Benjamin. Verse 18. On the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me, so that your words may be verified and that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. All right, so change of plans. Instead of them all staying in prison while one goes back and gets Benjamin, they all can go back except for one. And what do the brothers think of this? Verse 21. They said to one another, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. Interesting that they connect their present circumstances with their evil deed from many years before. Again, from over 20 years before. They disclose here what Joseph said back in chapter 37, which was not recorded there, and that is, that he pleaded for his life. And I have said before that this was what Joseph said while he was in the pit. But really, it may be in reference to when they sold him as a slave and the slave traders took him away. Perhaps as Joseph was dragged off or forced to walk away, he pleaded with his brothers, "Please, please, don't do this. Please save me." So whatever the exact reference is to Joseph pleading for his life, the brothers feel that their present situation in prison is punishment for ignoring his pleas for rescue. But interestingly, they don't say who is doing the punishing. They wouldn't say it was Joseph doing the punishing because they don't know it is him who put them into prison. Right? Verse 22. Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. Okay. This is one of the reasons why they would not have recognized Joseph, because for all they knew, this guy questioning them only spoke Egyptian. Joseph is using an interpreter. Verse 24, he turned away from them and began to weep, but then turned back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Joseph's tears here show that he loves them, even after what they did to him. Now remember that this is all a test. But how is this a test? They are leaving to go back home while one brother, Simeon, stays in an Egyptian prison. Before, their past record of brotherly care wasn't good. What about now? Will they fail in their brotherly love and not return to get Simeon, or will they come back for him? In other words, in the 20-plus years, how are they now when one brother is in danger? And of the 10 brothers, why Simeon? Why does Joseph choose Simeon to stay in prison while the other 9 are allowed to go back home? You ready for the short answer? I do not know. One possible answer I came across, perhaps, is that since Benjamin was the second son of Rachel and held back, Joseph chooses Simeon since he was the second son of the other wife, Leah. Other than that, I don't know that we know. At any rate, verse 25. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left. All right, so the boys head back to Canaan, minus brother Simeon, and they do get the grain they came for, but the silver they had brought to pay for the grain is secretly put back into their belongings. Verse 27. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey, and he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. "My silver has been returned," he said to his brothers. "Here it is in my sack." Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other, trembling, and said, "What is this that God has done to us?" Do you know when the last time silver was mentioned in Genesis? Your translation might say money. The Hebrew can mean either. But when was the last time this word was used? It was back in chapter 37. And what was the context there? The brothers sell Joseph to slave traders and receive silver in exchange. Is that a coincidence here in chapter 42? Remember, Joseph is testing them. What is the test here? Before, they had no qualms receiving silver or money at the expense of the loss of a brother. What will they do this time around when another brother, Simeon, sits in prison in Egypt, and it looks like they didn't pay for the grain? Yes, they did, but remember the money was put back. What will they do this time? When it looks like they have stolen that grain? I mean, they've already been charged as being spies. Adding the charge of stealing to their rap sheet is not going to help their case and get their brother out of Egyptian prison. And here, one of the brothers, we're not told which one, discovers his silver in his sack, and the other brothers hear this and they freak out. They will soon learn that all of them have their own silver in their own sacks. Verse 29. When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. Now what follows here through verse 34 is the brothers recounting to their father what happened on the trip to Egypt. And I won't take the time to go through these verses except to say that when the brothers relate the story to their father, they do omit certain details. Not necessarily lying, perhaps, but the danger that they are in is toned down. Nevertheless, they have returned. Simeon is still being held in Egypt, and the only way he will be released is if they return with their youngest brother, Benjamin. And then comes verse 35. As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. So, not only do the boys return home minus one of them, but they now learn that they still have their silver, which is supposed to be for the purchase of grain. Now, of course, Father Jacob would have had interaction with his other sons over the past 20-some years, since Joseph disappeared. But consider how the story is presented in the text, all right? As far as the biblical story is told, there are two times when the brothers come home to their father, minus one son, but with silver or money. When was the first time? Back in chapter 37. The sons returned to their father, but no Joseph. Where's Joe? He went to Egypt. But what did they have? They had silver. Where did the silver come from? From selling Joseph into slavery. Of course, they don't tell their father that, but let him believe that some wild beast devoured Joe. Did Jacob ever ask where that silver came from? But now we fast forward to chapter 42, and once again, the boys have come home to father, minus one of them, and with the addition of what? Again, silver. Does Father Jacob think, I smell a rat? Sure, we know where Simeon is and that the silver has been planted there without the brothers' knowledge, but what might Jacob be thinking? I mentioned it last time, but remember that Jacob never saw the body of Joseph. He saw the blood on that special robe and concluded that some wild beast devoured him. But perhaps, knowing the shenanigans of his boys, that there is more to the story of Joseph's disappearance than the boys have let on. And if so, have they now done away with Simeon as well? Are they lying also about the silver? And now they want to take Benjamin away? Of course, we the readers know the truth, but what might Jacob be thinking? Verse 36. Their father Jacob said to them, "You have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you want to take Benjamin? Everything is against me." And so, under my proposed scenario, might it be that Jacob is thinking his sons are out turning prophets by eliminating a brother one by one? And now that Jacob seems to have transferred his favorite child status to Benjamin, he protests that in no way, no how will Benjamin go to Egypt. Verse 37. Then Reuben said to his father, "You may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Entrust into my care and I will bring him back." Reuben is the oldest son and he guarantees the safe travels of Benjamin to and from Egypt. And if Benjamin does not return back alive, Reuben promises the life of his two sons. His reasoning is foolish though. If Jacob lost two sons, how would the additional deaths of two grandsons be of comfort to him? Well, you know, when people try to cleanse their guilt by doing it the wrong way, they come up with foolish solutions. I'll return to this topic of guilt shortly. Verse 38. But Jacob said, "My son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead and he's the only one left." Remember last week when we were at verse 4 that Jacob didn't want to send Benjamin because he might be harmed? And I suggested that the harm Jacob was fearing was harm coming from the other brothers. Verse 38 seems to further support that interpretation. Look at the end of verse 38. Jacob's still speaking here. "If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray hair down to the grave in sorrow." Where does Jacob fear harm might come upon Benjamin? Did you catch it? It says, "on the journey you are taking." You see that? Jacob is worried harm might come to Benjamin on the way to Egypt, not in Egypt. Sure, that could be from highway bandits, but perhaps what Jacob fears is harm coming from the brothers towards Benjamin on the way there. Now, in my time remaining, I want to show you something neat. After all, my sermon is titled From Callous to Culpable. I want to document for you the change that takes place in the brothers. We all want people to change. We all have areas where we need to change or work on. And And we want change to happen now. But because we are stubborn creatures, change doesn't always come easy. It can take time, but it is possible. From a literary perspective, before this chapter, the brothers have not spoken to each other since the day they sold Joseph into slavery. Now, we assume that they have, but as the story is told, how it's presented to us here in Genesis, we don't see them talking to each other since that horrible day when they sold Joseph to slave traders that took him down to Egypt. It's as if that terrible deed kept them apart and they didn't talk about it anymore. At the beginning of this chapter, chapter 42, the brothers still aren't shown talking to each other, but just staring at each other, verse 1. But then God uses a famine to get their ears in gear. In verses 7 and 11 through 13, they are talking, but not to each other. They're actually talking to Joseph, who they don't realize is Joseph. And they do admit there is a brother who, quote, is no more, unquote, verse 13. In verses 21 through 22, they are now talking to each other. They admit they did wrong to Joseph, and though they don't mention Joseph by name here, they do call him our brother. In these two verses, they also connect their present circumstances with what they did to Joseph. So, they are talking to each other, they are admitting what they did, and not only that, but at least in Reuben's words, he recognizes that they are accountable for what they have done. You see, when you can go from denying that you did anything wrong, to admitting you did something wrong, to then admitting you deserve the consequences, that shows a change of heart. And yet, what or who is missing in all this talk? There has been no mention of God. But go down to verse 28, and after one of them realized his silver was in his sack, notice what it says in 28b. It says, "Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other, trembling, and said, 'What is this that God has done to us?'" And so now God is mentioned. This is good. But did you catch what it also says here? Did you see the reference to hearts? Their hearts sank and they were trembling. What does this show? They still have a way to go, but at least they are under conviction. They are showing a change of heart from a callous heart to a culpable heart. And even though Reuben's attempt to offer his two sons as quote-unquote payment for Jacob's two sons is foolish, it does show a searching heart wanting relief for a guilty conscience. Reuben, like the world today, tries to find relief for guilt in the wrong places. You tell me, have these boys changed over the two previous decades? I think so. Is there more work, more change that needs to be done? Yes. But can't you see the change that has taken place in these scoundrels? And what about in our own lives? Has there been a change in the last 20 plus years? How about in the last year? Have you sensed God using events in your life to bring about change? Did you change? And was it change for the better or for the worse?